You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio on Sirius XM Channel 142 HBCU. You're now locked in to HBCU Pulse. We are the number one outlet for HBCU life, talking about everything that's important to our culture. From on-campus issues to politics and what's trending on the yard. We always keep that same energy. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and the host of HBCU Pulse Radio, in the building for another special edition of the show on today, where we are talking about how HBCU students can get into Hollywood. It's possible. It's very possible, especially if you do the HBCU's in LA program. We have Stacey Milner, founder of Entertainment Industry College Outreach Program and the HBCU in LA's program, here in the building on today to talk about the amazing things that her organization is doing. And for our podcast audience, this is the full interview. Listen, if you subscribe to the podcast right now, I appreciate you so much for listening. Of course, with the SiriusXM show, we can only do 28 minutes. So it was only so much of the interview that I could put in. But I wanted to make sure that we allowed this whole entire interview to get out there because I think it is quite honestly amazing. I got the opportunity to meet Ms. Milner when I was an HBCU All-Star for the White House Initiative on HBCUs. They now call it the HBCU Competitiveness Scholar. It was the 2017-2018 school year. It was unfortunately the first year of Donald Trump's presidency. And it was a lot of changes that was made to the HBCU Week Conference that the White House Initiative was putting on at that time because of protests due to things that Trump said, including his Charlottesville remarks. And it was the Monday we were at the Eisenhower Building because they didn't have the regular conference. So they decided to have the summit in the White House. It turned into a summit. And we were in the Eisenhower Building that first day. We were there for the majority of the day. And we had a session where Melissa Ingram, who at the time was the president of Aspire TV, she came and spoke to us. Then we went into another workshop that featured a whole bunch of internship providers talking about all the amazing internships that they were offering. And Stacey Milner was in that workshop. So I was like in heaven for a couple of hours because BET was there. You had the other Viacom stations was there. You had the other like media companies and corporate media partners. They were there. And you had Miss Stacey Milner, who was pushing HBCUs in LA, that was there. So I went over to talk to her immediately. And I told her really about how I was feeling about graduation. I told her that honestly, I didn't know what the future entailed for me. I didn't know if I could make it in the industry. I didn't know if there was an opportunity. She told me to stay true to my goals, to not waver from what I want to do and be uncomfortable. She gave me her book and she said to read it and just to really continue to strive and to keep going. And it's just so crazy that 6 years later, I get the opportunity as a former White House HBCU All-Star to interview her about the amazing things that she's doing with the Entertainment Industry College Outreach Program and the HBCUs in LA program. A lot of students are part of it. A lot of students have benefited. And to be honest with y'all, for the podcast audience, man, I want to do HBCUs in LA, but I don't want to be uncomfortable. And I talked about it in the interview, so make sure to tap in with that. And for anybody, if you have an HBCU student, a friend, mass comm students that want to make it into the entertainment industry, they need to listen to this interview right now. We talk about a lot of pertinent things, such as how you can make it to the entertainment industry from an HBCU, the state of mass communications and media studies in the education system in 2023, and also how you can even get an HBCUs in LA and so much more. So make sure to stay tuned. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio, the exclusive extended edition of my interview with Ms. Stacey Milner.
HBCU.
They know just who we are.
Pulse Radio.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and the host of HBCU Pulse Radio, in the building for another special interview on today. And oh my gosh, this is a really special interview. Because if anybody knows anything about me, I am incredibly proud of being a 2017 White House HBCU All-Star. And while I was there, I went into a workshop. And this workshop was about how to make it post-graduation and I was a mass comm major, and I walk into the room, I see BET, I see Viacom, CBS, and I see Stacey Milner in the building, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm about to leave out here with a job. And it's crazy because like 5-6 years later, she's right here, the founder of the Entertainment Industry College Outreach Program. Ms. Milner, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. I hope I can match your energy. I am honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Listen, like it's so crazy just to have the moment to speak to you on the show now, because like what you said, it really spoke to me, because when I was about to graduate, I was a junior at that time. I didn't know what I was going to do. And it's funny because I still don't know what I'm going to do. But listen, you still helped me out. I got the book. I read the book. So it's just so amazing to talk to you now. So first and foremost, how are you doing? How have things been?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. Things have been exploding in terms of the program and the impact of what we're doing. But I've been great. It's just been such a blessing, right, to be able to have this vision and be able to carry it through and to be able to see things happening the way they are. I'm sitting on top right now and I'm thrilled about it. So I'm doing well.
So let's go in and get started. So could you tell us a little bit about how you started your entertainment journey?
Wow. Well, that's an interesting story. It's a little bit lengthy, but I'm going to encapsulate it as much as I can. I first want to say, just dialing back a little bit, it is such a humbling moment to meet you in this space and to know that our paths crossed at the very onset of the work that I am doing and have now been doing for a little bit, right? But to know that there was an impact in your life is the whole reason why I do what I do. So that being said, I just wanted to, my heart is just full because I feel your gratitude. I feel what you're feeling. And, you know, you step in a room and you don't often think that you're going to really make an impact or, you know, that's just kind of the way I am. But to hear it like this is very humbling and rewarding for me. So how did my journey start? Well, I was a kid who grew up in Dayton, Ohio, raised by a single parent. I'm one of five kids. I'm next to the oldest. I have five brothers. I have no sisters, and grew up in a factory town and graduated from high school. And my aunt, who used to come in town on government business, happened to come in town, and I had visited her in California the summer before and went with my cousin, who at the time was a page giving tours at NBC. And I was like, this is a job? Like, I want to come back and do this. So when my aunt comes back in town the next year, I said, I'm going back to California with you. And she said, I'll believe that when you're on the plane next to me. And I said, okay. I went to work. I was working for the local bank investigating stolen credit cards. Pretty fun. But I went and gave my notice, bought my plane ticket, and headed off to California. Now, my goal was to come to California to gain residency so I could afford to go to school. And my cousin said, I'll get you an interview over at NBC for the Page program. And I said, great. So I got this interview, found out that you had to be a college graduate to be a Page. And I was very honest with the lady and said, I haven't gone to college yet. And she said, I don't care. I know who I want to hire when I want to hire them. And that then led me into becoming a Page, giving tours behind the scenes, working the Tonight Show, and some shows that are way before you all's time, like the Midnight Special and all these other shows. But anyway, that led me in, and I knew that once I was inside of this industry and seeing all of its possibilities, I said, this is where I need to be. Kind of like you in that room, like, I'm going to get a job. Like, I'm going to be here.
I want you to talk to us about your story behind creating the Entertainment Industry College Outreach Program and why you started it.
Wow. Well, I started it because of my passion and my love for the industry and not seeing myself in the industry. I was often the only one in the room. But it all stemmed from, you know, working at the highest level. So I'm the former assistant to the chairmen of NBC and Paramount. So I worked with the top brass, and it's multi-layered. So when I was working for the chairmen of the studios, we and those C-suite offices didn't often like to call for temporary help. And so I was like, oh my goodness, like I could start, if I hire people who know what I know, I could actually have a temp pool and we could just meet the needs of the executives of the industry. And so that was kind of the light bulb for me that went on. And I said, well, I'm going to do this. So I started a staffing agency. But then when I realized with the staffing agency, and NBC was my first account. I mean, who starts a business and NBC is your first account? But that's where I was, right? But then I realized, too, that there was another generation coming in. And so I wrote this book called Leveraging Up, The Key to Launching Your Entertainment Career, and went on a book tour to colleges and universities across the country. And so when I ended up on the campus of HBCUs, I saw the disconnect, right? The industry was not coming to campus. When you all had career fairs, you didn't have anybody that was a major studio network, anybody coming to your campus. And so I saw that. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to go back and I'm going to invite my industry clients who use us as a staffing provider to be able to say, hey, if you guys are really serious about diversity, join me. I'm going to do an HBCU college tour. And so I did this tour and industry came. Students were like, oh my God, like all these people are in the room. Like, will they really hire us? And I'm like, absolutely. I was bringing these educational career forums to campus and we were demystifying the fact that Hollywood is more than writing, acting, directing, and producing. There's a whole infrastructure of career pathways that have to be supported that you can land on. And so at the end of those forums, we would do recruitment fairs. And they were just mini one-on-one, very personal, interactive, but students weren't getting the opportunities. And so I would call my clients and say, so how many people landed internships? And they would say, well, we made offers, but they couldn't afford to take them because they don't have housing. So light bulb goes on for me. And I said, well, we got to remove that barrier. So at the time, it was in I launched my tour in 2010. At the time, I was just educating the industry on the acronym of HBCUs, right? They were saying HBCs, they were saying a whole bunch of other stuff. They didn't know what we were talking about. Now it's all the buzz. But then I went to them and I was saying, we really need to create a pathway and a way for them to be here. So at the time I was doing this tour, President Obama's team reached out to me and said, we heard what you're doing. How do we help expand you to our stakeholders? That's how I got connected to the White House initiative on HBCU folks. And so I invited them to come to LA to meet the industry and for us to have a roundtable discussion about what I had been doing in terms of boots on the ground and the president's initiative on HBCUs. And so after that discussion, we realized that there were two barriers. Geographically, HBCUs are not in the industry's backyard. Secondly, you got students coming from low wealth households, can't afford to live in LA for a summer on an intern salary. So that's when I decided, okay, so guys, let's put your money where your mouth is. I'm going to establish the Entertainment Industry College Outreach Program as an educational arts workforce development nonprofit organization. And it would allow you all to sponsor us so that we could underwrite the cost of housing, you host them for an internship, and voila, ECOP was born. HBCU in LA became our signature program.
Listen, HBCU in LA, it's crazy just to hear folks still talk about it. I graduated 4 years ago and I have, you know, students, you know, that I mentor and that I work with. They were like, hey, Randall, how I get HBCUs in LA? And I told them, man, listen, I don't know. You do that video. Like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Go out there and make it up. There's a lot of folks applying. So you better make it good, you know, but it's still something that is just so key and pivotal to the HBCU community, because that's one of the only lanes that a lot of institutions have to get students in the industry. Because like you said, like you'll have, you know, studios and actors and actresses and directors, they'll go to bigger institutions like Howard, like FAMU, but a Fort Valley, like where I attended Florida State University, they just simply weren't coming there. So it was a great equalizer. And I'm looking at the success rate, an intern to hire conversion rate of 90%. That is high. Like 90% of folks in the program get jobs. So what goes into the success of getting your interns hired at these studios and these corporations?
Right. Well, first of all, when I bring on a new partner and an organization, to me, I'm not looking for just a check and a Band-Aid. I'm looking for you to be strategic and intentional with me about this investment and this approach. I'm also looking for partners that are very serious about diversifying the workforce pipeline. I'm saying, hey, look, I'm going out, I'm aggregating this talent, I'm building connections and relationships with HBCUs. So we're doing it, we're giving you what you want, what you say you can't find. If we provide this talent to you, all things align, they're eligible for hire at the end, there's an open position, let's create employment. And so partners have taken that very seriously. And I think the other secret sauce that we have is that we are actually providing the community with wraparound support. These students come to LA. Some of them, it's their first time on a plane. Sometimes their first time anywhere outside of their own geographical boundaries. And we are welcoming them here to a family. you're not coming and being isolated all by yourself. Because a lot of times companies will say, oh, well, we'll bring in an HBCU student, but then you house that student all by themselves. They're the only place in their only person of color in their workplace. They experience all types of cultural issues and changes, but no one's there to support them. So what I did is I created a housing system so that we house them together. They go off to work, they come home, they go upstairs, they cook in the kitchen together. We have Thursday speaker series. We are supporting them. You know, what's going on? How was your day? They're, you know, iron sharpens iron, right? They're seeing one colleague do well. They want to do the same. And I just think it's just rising them to a new level. So I think students are literally just coming in and performing at such a high level because they have the support system behind them.
I want you to go deeper into the HBCUs in LA program, because like I said, it's something that students, even to this day, even more than when I was in school, they're really clamoring for, because a lot of us still want to be in the entertainment industry. And because of the changes in the industry, like a lot of us are vacating that dream. We're saying, wow, like maybe we shouldn't, you know, major in mass comm. AI is here. You know, it's a lot of consolidation now. So maybe there's not going to be a job for me and maybe my place isn't here. So I think HBCUs in LA, like I said, is a great equalizer. So tell us more about that part of the program.
Yeah, it is an equalizer. And that was probably what I knew that this that my community needed, right? Because when I would come to campus, these students really want to be in this industry. They just have no idea how to get there. And there's no real systematic partnership or relationship between the HBCUs and the industry. They have it with, you know, the STEM areas. That same type of model has to be incorporated for the entertainment side, communication side. I mean, it's so broad and it's so vast that we just really wanted to be able to give them a place to emerge and help them understand what it takes from a culture and environment aspect of what this industry is and how you actually get an internship. But that's what we do. And I was surprised that we were probably the only entity at the time, an organization that was actually creating this type of pathway for young people of color to be in this space. And I was just floored by the fact that they weren't even being guided to their, like, their local radio stations or news stations. And you know, there's all those things. There's the film commission office within a state that brings productions, but nobody knew any of that. And so I was bringing it and I was honored to do so. And so, you know, we are leveling the playing field. I can see us 5-10 years from now, we're not going to be talking about the lack of diversity in the overall workforce because we are ushering that talent in. And so the more we can build those partnerships and relationships with our HBCUs and the industry, and began doing some curriculum enhancement, bringing some special adjunct, you know, professors and guest speakers in, like, we can really change this thing. And the HBCU in LA program is the start of that, because with our educational aspects of our program, partners are now wanting to do that. And so we're on the cusp of something really, really great to expand for our community.
Listen, you're here right now. And a lot of folks, like I said, they ask me, like, how do I get an HBCUs in LA? And I say, listen, make that video tight, apply. But listen, I can't give the advice on how to get in, but I feel like you can. So I need you to let us know, how can a student get into the program and make it their best shot of getting into the program?
Well, I will say this, because we are the only, I wouldn't say the only, I would. There's other folks that are doing these similar types of program, but HBCU in LA is very different. It is more student focused, right? It is what the students are looking for. And so when people say, you know, what do you look for? Who's a standout, you know, applicant? Students that are passionate and hungry, right? Students that are doing podcasts on their own, like on their campuses. Students that are involved in things on campus. So if you want to be a PR major, are you a part of the PR club? Are you promoting things on campus? Like, sometimes they think it has to be this work outside of campus. It has to be what it is you say you're passionate about. It needs to be reflected in your resume, in your volunteer things, the things that you do. That's what really stands out to us. Don't tell me you want to be a writer and you've never been involved in the student production and a play or anything like that, or you don't even have something half written or an idea for what you want to do. So it's good to say you want to do that, but if you want to do it, then you need to be doing it. It's just like people say, I want to write. I want to write a book. I've been saying I'm going to write a book. Listen, if you sit and write one page a day, and three after a year, that's 365 pages, right? That you will have written. So for me, to get into HBCU in LA, you need to be involved on campus. You need to get into leadership roles. You just need to be engaged around what it is that you're going to try to pitch to us that you're passionate about.
Hey, that's very practical. And you said something very key about doing something. And as a MassCom graduate, and I've spoken with a lot of different MassCom majors, and I know for me, I came in with a different advantage because I already was writing books. Like in high school, I'd published, you know, a book, and then my freshman year, my second book came out. So I already had that work, and I wasn't, you know, monetarily efficient. I was still trying to figure that out, and I still am now. But I had that sort of like that way of, hey, I know where I'm going, but a lot of students really don't know. And social media is here. Like you have folks that have a large TikTok following, they have a large Instagram following, they have a large YouTube following. But I think oftentimes it's minimized because the whole entire notion of mass communications is minimized. You see a lot of programs going away. You see a lot of aspects of mass comm programs getting taken away, like it's being divested. So like, just what's your opinion on the state of mass communications and media studies at our HBCUs today?
They need to be there and they need to stay there. Because think about it, everything we do, we're communicating to the masses, right? You've got to be able to write, you got to be able to pitch, you got to be able to sell whatever it is, whether it's a product, whether it's a show, whether it's yourself. Communication is key. I don't understand that. I read your earlier pre-question. I'm like, what? Like, how is MassCom, you know, going to hinder your career at all? MassCom is one of those areas that allows you to go into any industry, quite frankly, because everybody needs it. So I would just say, no, do not divest in those. It's such a key area. And I think that even for us, because one of the things that we ask students to do is to write a personal statement. Tell me who you are. And you'd be surprised how many folks don't know how to write who they are or pitching themselves. And then we ask you to create a video. That's communication. How are you selling yourself? What are you saying? What's your story? So yeah, no, they need to be there. It does not need to go away. Yes, we're in a more digital space, but even within digital, somebody has to create that content that has to then go up on digital, right? So no, I disagree with that. I just think that it is definitely something that should stay and be invested in, because if you can't write and you can't articulate yourself, you don't know how to take an image of something and be able to get someone else to see the vision, where do you go, right? And I want to go back to this question, to this part of a statement that you made, social media. Like, people get all these followers and they do all these other things. And sometimes they'll try to sell that on their resume. And it's great, but they need to be able to say what it is. On social media, launched in such and such, gained X amount of followers over this, increased by percentage by this amount. And these are some of the technical things that I did. Sometimes they just think, I did a podcast, or I have a huge following on social media. But I'm taking your resume and I'm putting that resume in front of somebody over at Disney or an NBC, and that doesn't tell me a whole lot. They're not just going to go and visit your platform and see exactly, you know, who you are and what you've been able to do. You need to be able to communicate that. So it just all ties in.
I love it. And, you know, the thing I always had when it came to mass communications, and I always spoke about it when I was at Fort Valley and even to other folks that, you know, went to other institutions, is that we are taught in a news focus when you concentrate in broadcasting. We are taught specifically how to work at CNN or even how to work at your local news station. But for folks like me that wanted to be in radio, I came in simply at the wrong time. I came in fall 2015. If I came in fall 2005, I'm perfect. You know, I can give me a job. I have me a shift at night and work my way up. But 2015, it's like, can I do it? Because syndication is a big thing. Voice tracking is a big thing. So I think one of my criticisms of, you know, mass communication departments, often, not all of them, is that we learn so much about news, but what about the other disciplines of mass communications? TV and movies, radio, other aspects of how to communicate, even social media now. We don't learn that. But, you know, for you, you've been in this industry, like you've seen so many different lanes of the industry, and you're working with these college students. So do you believe that mass communication students are learning enough in their collegiate courses to make it in the industry?
Well, I'm not a professor and I'm not in the classroom, but what I'm seeing Some of them, yes. I think it depends on the program, depends on where their focus is, right? So MassCom can have all these different tracks. After you kind of get the general, do you have a targeted focus for what that discipline is you want to go into? And I do think that I know typically that HBCUs are underfunded and all those sorts of things. So I also know that the resources are limited in terms of what they can expose folks to. But I don't think it's anything for an HBCU to begin to think about those other areas of discipline that are within the mass communication field that they do need to expose students to. Particularly, like, even when I have students that want to be in the scripted or even the unscripted area, but particularly for the scripted, how to write a script coverage, right? Do you know how to provide coverage on a project or an idea that comes in? Do you know how to write a script effectively? Do you know how to write a press release? I don't know that enough of that is there. And sometimes in the industry, when you are being, when you're applying for a job and a part of the interview process, is that you have to provide a book report, right? Which is script coverage on a type of project. If you want to go into that creative track of developing content, if you're going to be on the PR side, they're going to want you to send a sample press release. Do you know how to do that? And I just don't know that all of that is there. And I do think for too long, we have been just focused on the journalism side. It's okay. You may know how to write a story, but there's way more to it than that. If you are heavy news focused, then that's your track, right? But if you have all these other interests and lanes you want to be in, then you need to figure out, you know, the other areas and be able to teach those students in those other disciplines and fields. Just like you turn and pivot when it comes to, oh, we've got to step it up to AI, or we got to step it up in the STEM space. Everybody doesn't want to be in STEM, right? There are a lot of people like, this is great. That's their lane. My lane is creative. And so how am I embraced in my institution for my creative ability and to be able to use my mass comm skill to translate that over into a job and to be prepared day one when I come out of this institution?
When I was enrolling at Fort Valley and I had, you know, my books, I had written my first book. It was out for about a year. And then my second book was coming out when I was about to be at Fort Valley. You know, I was getting ready to be a mass comm major, but my mom said, Randall, you need to be an education major because the teachers make the money. There's never going to be a shortage of teachers. And I know that there are a lot of parents who care about their children, care about their future adults, that want them to succeed in the workforce. And I think that oftentimes for a lot of parents, it's a tough sell saying, I want to be in media. I want to work on this set. I want to pitch this show. So in your opinion, like, what is the value of students wanting to work in the entertainment industry? Like, what is the value of that? And how would you sell that value?
Wow. Well, I think that is a cultural issue and challenge for our community, right? Because we have struggled so much that we are looking for our children, young people, to get into those secure jobs, like become a doctor, become a lawyer, you know, do teaching, you know, go work at the, like Tyler Perry has told the story about how his mom, like, just go down there and work for the, you know, Department of Water and Power and collect those bills. Like, you'll get a paycheck, you get a pension, child, do that. But you're unfulfilled, right? You're not fulfilled in doing that. And so I think they need to understand, A, how lucrative this industry is. Folks think, you know, you're never going to make it as a singer or an actor or a producer. And yes, you will. You have to step out there. The other community has allowed their students and allowed their young people to explore and to go into these spaces, and they support them in their arts. And there's a huge economic gain within it. I mean, look at people and the amount of money that they are making. I mean, everybody doesn't become an Oprah Winfrey, right? Or a Tyler Perry, but that is the possibility. That is what is there. But there's a whole lot of people making large six-figure salaries, and they are doing marketing. They are babysitting a show and its production. I mean, they're crunching numbers, so you don't have to just be a finance person and be on Wall Street. Like, we got to manage budgets of multi-million dollar films and projects. Like, there is so much that is there, and I just don't think that the community understands the value that can be brought to someone pursuing a career path in this industry. I mean, heck, I was an executive assistant, and I was at a six-figure salary, babysitting top-level people. So, you know, it's just something that we just don't understand enough of. And I just think that is one of the things that I've always wanted to have a session at an HBCU. The new freshman class is coming in, And I would love to be able to be there with that freshman class, with parents there, to talk about the entertainment industry and the communications field and what is possible for them and what they need to do now, starting from their freshman year until they graduate, to ensure that they're going to have a pathway and a career coming out of school. So it's more about educating the community about the possibility. Everybody sees it as that needle in the haystack, or every now and then somebody makes it. But this industry is huge. And think about how long it's been around and how much revenue it brings in. It's something that we need to just have education around and continue to encourage our young people to get out there and bring it.
Hey, I love that answer. And you say you want to bring it to, you know, some college campuses to talk about it at orientation. And there are some like orientation leaders. There are some education professionals that listen to this show, they listen to the podcast, listen to HBC Pulse Radio on Sirius XM. So maybe they'll be reaching out. You know what I mean? Because like that really is needed, especially for the mass comm students. Just for the mass comm students, there's someone that graduated 4 years ago. I know it isn't better because of COVID. I know it isn't better because when I graduated the semester before COVID. So I know it's worse now than it was when I was in, because you had that 2-year layoff. So to be honest, we're really at 2021 in 2023 because things have not been that developed anyway. We're just now bouncing back. But I think this is another big portion of the conversation, because one of the big aspects, you know, of the program is diversity in Hollywood. We've seen an assault on diversity, equity, and inclusion in so many aspects in politics, but now it's something that we see coming up when it comes to Hollywood. And we've heard about it with the Oscars, with a lot of other productions. So just for you, like, how important is diversity, equity, and inclusion in Hollywood and in the media space?
It's very important. Very important. And, you know, like I said, I've been doing this since 2010, right? So I didn't just start doing this at the height of the most unfortunate situation with the George Floyd tragedy. I've been doing this a while. And so I have heard, you know, everything from the affirmative action pushes to, you know, we want to do more diversity, and they have the chief diversity officer. So there's all these different things they are trying to, and have tried to do something about it. But my whole thing is that it is so key to make sure that the industry continues what it started. I think the real eye-opening moment came with George Floyd. I think a lot of companies really took a look inside, did some introspective looking, and said, look, we really need to change and shift here. What we have set up and provided for them is a way and a solution for them to be able to say, okay, we now have a diversity pipeline initiative that we can work with, and we can really begin to affect our workforce, because the stories that we need to tell are going to be very different. We are rapidly becoming a minority majority nation. So what you did before isn't going to sell like it did before, right? There's a new demand. And I think that is also going to keep the needle going forward. And I think we're going to have a huge shift. But it's very important to the industry because it's important to their bottom line. I mean, you look at films like Black Panther, right? Spider-Verse, all of this stuff. Like, we are there. And we, as Black Hollywood, have to keep that momentum going. So it's extremely, extremely important. And we can't let up, because what happens is so often is that we as a community will put all this pressure on, and then everybody gets lax. And then we go back to status quo. I have a tenacity about me that no way. I will continue this program. I will continue to push it even further. We're developing the next generation content creators. The poster you see over my shoulder, and I don't know if your audience sees pictures, but anyway, that film was produced by HBCU and LA students. I mean, they were the producers, they were the writers. They are bringing content that they want to see, and they get to produce this. So, you know, it's here to stay, and it's very, very important, and the industry will be smart towards its own bottom line to make sure that it continues to embrace our stories and bring more equity, diversity, inclusion to this industry.
I love it. So for our radio audience, because we're going to be on YouTube, we have the visual element, but for our radio audience that can't see the picture, that's over your right shoulder, tell us what that is. I gotta paint the picture. So tell us what, you know, that project is so we can maybe go check it out and see what's going on with it.
Yeah, you can check it out on YouTube. I mean, our HBCU in LA YouTube channel has it, but it's called Uchawi. Black Magic is what I think is the African name for that. But this young lady graduated. First of all, the students get to pitch a project. So every year we're going to do either a short film or something of that nature. Where last year we did a one-act play read, dramatic play read. But the students are told, hey, pitch an idea to us. They pitch to a live writer's room, industry professionals, and we take one of those stories and take pen to paper. And that particular project, Uchawi, was the one that we did. And it was a young lady out of Howard University. She wrote it, had to spend time rewriting in a writer's room with professional writers, crafting her story. And then we actually went to physical production and shot for 2 days. And the students were the cameramen. They set dress. They did makeup. They did wardrobe. They did everything. That entire cast and crew was all HBCU in LA students, and students from multiple HBCUs involved in that project. And it was so successful. The Smithsonian African American Museum out of DC was in town that summer to teach a class during one of our sessions. And they knew we were doing this short film. And so they said, Stacy, when you're done with it, let us see it, because we may want to have it as a part of our African American Smithsonian African American Film Festival. So I said, okay. We sent the finished product to them. They said, oh my God, we were blown away. They invited us to be a part of their Smithsonian African American Film Festival. And then COVID hit, so we didn't actually make it. But this film is incredible. And this is, we've got three in the can now. So we are already positioning ourselves to have our own production company with a deal so that we are bringing in the next generation content creators, and we're going to start producing stuff and having, you know, some amazing things. So that's what that is. So you can find it. You can visit us through our social media channel and check out Uchawi on YouTube.
Sometimes you just wish you could go back into a time machine. And I wish that, like, because you got to understand, and this is like the last portion of the interview before I let you go. I got to tell you about this and get your advice on this, right? So when I was in the White House initial HBCU's program, the HBCU All-Stars program, I was really undecided on which internship that I wanted to do. Because you had HBCUs in LA, which I talked to you. I'm like, yo, this seems like something that I really would want to do. Then you had Aspire. And I was just so undecided after that day, because it was that Monday. I was so undecided in the Eisenhower building. I was like, I don't know what I want to do. Do I want to do Aspire TV in Atlanta? Do I want to do HBCUs in LA? I was going to apply for both. But the thing that held me back, honestly, it was nothing but this, because I'm like, I can make a video. I can apply for this. I'm ready. I'm ready for this. I want to make it. It's my junior year. I'm about to graduate. Let's do it. But it was like, man, I don't want to leave my family like that, you know, because I've never been that far away from my family, because I lived in Macon, Georgia. Fort Valley is really right down the street, like 30 minutes away. Like, I traveled, like, going to D.C. was my first time on a plane. So I was like, man, like, I'm going to do Aspire. And I love that experience, but I'm going to do Aspire because it's in Atlanta. And that's something to me that was safe. But I'm hearing all these amazing things you're saying about HBCUs in LA. And I know my time has passed, but I know there has to be some students that have felt the way I felt and feel the way that I feel. So, like, what would you say to the students that want it? They're passionate. They want to get in this industry, but they hear LA, they might live in Georgia or Alabama or Florida, and they say, you know what? I might not want to go that far because I'm going to be homesick and I'm going to miss my family. Like, what would you say to them?
I would say, then you probably shouldn't. Because, and you know, but I also would say at the same time, you know, in order for you to reach the goal and the heights that you want to reach, sometimes you have to get in a very uncomfortable place. And sometimes that means leaving your nest. That means leaving all your safe, comfortable surroundings. And you got to take the risk and you got to take the leap. I cannot tell you how many students have come here and, you know, they're homesick in the beginning. I mean, you know, we got avocados and all these different kinds of weird foods. And they're like, man, where the fried food at? You know, like, I don't want none of this. So, you know, there's all kinds of things that happen. But at the same time, they're like, oh, you know, you see them like own themselves and find a part of them that they didn't even know. So I think sometimes just getting in those uncomfortable places and spaces is what is needed to take you to, you know, the vision and dream that you have for yourself. It's not like you can't always ever go back home. Heck, you can come here and make so much money that you have your home in your home place, and then you have your home here. So that's the kind of wealth you can have. But we see it all the time. But I think that is also why I intentionally wanted to make sure that there was community when they got here, because it is a different place, and it's a different, it's just a different beast when you haven't been a part of something that's so different from what you're comfortable with.
Man, listen, hindsight is 20/20, and I need glasses. Oh my God. So if I could have sent this interview to Randall in 2017, man, listen, I'd be in LA right now. You know what I'm saying? Like right now, I'd be in LA. We'd be making a show, but I'd also be standing for the writer's strike too. I'll be out there with the picket sign too, man. If hindsight was 20/20.
Well, listen, we have a young man right now, okay? He came out of a little small school, Houston Tillerson, okay? This guy is now an executive doing kind of like what you're saying, right? He was a 2018-2019 cohort, and he just signed, well, about a year ago, he signed a 4-year deal. He is now a literary manager and executive recruiting talent, developing talent, content, and that's what is possible when you get involved and immersed in this industry. There is no other program that's going to put you in the eye of the storm, if you would, inside of this industry. And you then have the opportunity to learn and grow and see so many different aspects of this industry that you didn't even know existed. And you find yourself being an executive in this industry, or a creative, whatever it is that you want to do. So yeah, hindsight is 20/20. And if we could all roll back the time, we'd do a lot of things differently. But you are where you are, and I am so proud of you having this podcast and being able to have this to the community. Call on me anytime you need a little somebody to come in and talk about a topic or subject. But I am very proud of you, and I think that you have just begun your journey, and there is so much more ahead of you.
I really appreciate that. And like I said, it's a full circle moment, because we had the same conversation in the White House in Eisenhower Building. The exact same conversation. Like, Ms. Miller, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, same conversation. But listen, this was amazing. And I really appreciate you just for all the knowledge that you imparted today and everything you're doing for HBC students, like that young man, and just everything that you've done. I know a lot of amazing students that were part of HBCUs in LA, and there's going to be even more. So I'm just super excited, you know, to see more students get the opportunity and really grow. But before we go, tell everyone where they can find you on social media, how they can apply for the program, and anything you have coming up.
Yeah, so social, everything is really easy. At HBCU in LA. On our website, it's EICOP, which stands for Entertainment Industry College Outreach Program. So EICOP.org. And it has all the information there, when to apply. We will open up applications again in the fall for 2024. But yeah, when we're on LinkedIn, we have an HBCU in LA and LinkedIn. So, you know, we're posting and we're sharing. We're out there. So love for you guys to follow us, check us out. And yeah, support us. You know, keep spreading the word about this program. Have us come to your campus, all those kinds of things. If you're an HBCU alum out there and you're listening to this program, working in this industry, make sure that you're advocating for someone from HBCU in LA to be in your organization, and come out and share and mentor and give back to the next generation.
I love it. So yes, make sure to support, make sure to spread the word, and students, make sure to apply to get the amazing benefits of what's happening. But Ms. Milner, thank you so much for coming on. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
Like what you hear?
Yeah.
Subscribe to HBCU Pulse Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, head to HBCUpulse.com to stay up to date on what's going on in the HBCU community. Thank you for listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.